Accession number 32303, Reel 2.
This is Harland.
Yep. British American Tobacco, BAT.
Right. Well, this is Wing Commander Norman
Cave. He was the Chief Radar Officer in the Far East.
Right.
That's right, Norman Cave.
So was he your boss?
He was my boss, yes. He was Wing Commander. I was a Flight Lieutenant acting.
LACDE Nun.
That's right.
Now, he's obviously not in uniform.
No, no.
Dressed up for what?
He's dressed up for a kind of a play that they put on.
Right.
In one of the camps, a group of RAF prisoners got together and wrote a little play, a comic play.
Yes.
And each took a part.
I see. You've written here, is it the Morse Patty? Or
Mouse Patty.
Mouse Patty Entertainers.
That's right.
One of his most striking parts was that of Nina Naughty.
Nina Naughty, that's right.
The curvaceous vamp shown in this caricature, and it really is absolutely beautiful. With turban, red and white costume, how beautiful.
This whispering baritone. Forgotten his name, though.
Winstanley.
Winstanley, yeah, that's right.
L.A.C.
Good old Yorkshire name. L.A.C., was he?
L.A.C., yes.
That's right, yeah.
Your note here says he was very popular with the prisoner audience, who christened him the Whispering Baritone.
That's right.
He died in a Sumatran camp in May 1944.
Really?
That's what you've written here.
Yeah, well... This is a duet.
Yes.
What are they called?
Holmes and Munns. And they were known, they were part of the Morse Patty Entertainers.
Mouse Patty.
Mouse Patty, thank you.
Mouse is pronounced Mouse.
Mouse. How interesting. Eric Turton.
That's right. Play the ukulele.
That's right.
And that's right.
And he managed to preserve it.
That's
through.
Right. Yeah.
But he too died out in Liang.
Did he?
He said here, on the way back to Java in June 1944.
Oh dear.
How dreadful.
It is. It really is sad.
Now we've got a wonderful illustration you've done here called Death in the Castle.
That's right, this is a little play they put on.
And you've got here written down the Auto Drivers Group.
Yep, yep.
Persgler, Cleave, Sullivan, Pegler, and Brett.
That's right. Sullivan went off to America, I think.
Right.
I think he emigrated to America.
Righty ho. That is an absolutely wonderful one of them, all in costume. Or rather, are these the costumes that you've attributed in the caricatures, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
How brilliant. Yarmouk Camp Surabaya is this next group. We have Wing Commander
Cave.
Groom.
Groom, yeah, yeah, Group Commander Groom. He was OC. The camp in Surabaya.
Right.
That is prisoner OC.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, if anything went wrong in the camp, he was punished.
You say here he was a very courageous man.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't hesitate to confront the Japanese on all and any matters about which he felt strongly.
Yeah.
He accepted the need for the discipline imposed by the Japanese, but was fearless in protesting when they'd stepped over the mark as he saw
it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
As a result, he disappeared, in inverted commas, quite early on. Rumour had it that he was put in solitary confinement somewhere. Whatever the truth of the matter, he survived.
He did.
That's what you've got here.
Yeah,
Wing
yeah.
Commander J. Groom.
Yeah, that's right.
Brave man.
They were. There were.
Now then.
He's an MO.
This is...
Medical officer.
Flight Lieutenant Tommy Thompson.
Yep.
RAFBR.
That's right.
And you say your acquaintance with him was limited to the first few months at Yarmarket Camp.
Yeah.
Looked rather dapper.
Yeah, well, yes, quite dapper.
Flight Lieutenant Bill Tierney and AC-2 Tucker. Doc Tierney. The MO with the big heart. And this picture, you say, is of a card game with AC-2 Tucker, one of the lowliest of irks. Here on the bamboo shelves, now you'll have to pronounce this, Afdeling Puertokangan. Puertokangan? Afdeling Puertokangan, the native...
Afdeling. Puertokangan.
Thank you.
Puertokangan. Pertukalan.
The native
Afdeling means department. Pertukalan was the name of that particular department.
Right.
Yeah.
The native arts and crafts section of the annual exhibition ground called Yarmarket.
That's right.
We all slept huddled together, officers and other ranks, cheek by jowl. Tucker, with his limited intelligence, followed that section of the irk population that peppered every sentence with the F word.
Mm.
Invariably, Tierney referred to him as... Do you recall what he referred to him as? Tucker? The little?
Yeah.
Something that rhymes.
That's right.
How very apt.
That's right, that's right.
Mr. G. Spoik?
Groom.
Spoik?
Is it Hook?
S-P-O-E-K. A Dutch civilian internee.
D-O-E-K, is it?
S-P-O-E-K.
Spook.
Spook.
Yeah, spook. There we are.
He was a Dutch civilian internee, a school teacher by profession, who introduced you to the rudiments of the Dutch language.
That's right.
And lent me Dutch books to cut my teeth on.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see much of him. He was just there.
He says, in those early days, many of the Dutch were not military personnel,
yeah,
and had been able to bring into the camp small items from their homes to introduce a modicum of civilization into their cramped quarters. Spook is seen carrying such items, a cane chair and a number of notebooks. These drawings are exceptional. They really are.
I'll find it out.
Ah, what can you tell me about...
A Dutchman who eventually emigrated to Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
He was a particular friend of mine because he was interested in plants. And so we had a common interest. And he promised that when the war was over and we were released, he would take me on a trek up the Damo. I've forgotten what it was now.
Mm-hmm.
The name is the highest mountain in the area.
Right.
And he would take me up on a trek, taking 2 or 3 days to go up the mountain and come back.
Right.
But it never happened because when we were released, I was released from Java and he was released from where now?
Now it says here he went up to the Thai Burma Railway.
That's right, yeah. That's right, yeah. Yeah. That was rather exceptional, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't send many prisoners up north from Java.
Right.
I made contact with him again after the war and actually stayed with him for three or four days.
Yes.
At his home in the North Island of New Zealand.
And his name is pronounced Bessel de Vant Wout.
Van Wout.
Wout.
Van Wout, yes.
Thank you. Now, the Lyceum, or Hoge...
Hoge Boerschool.
October to December 1942. So, who have we got here? Harry Grumbach.
Harry Grumbach. In the RAF, he worked the... oh dear, what was it called now? The filter room.
Flight Lieutenant Harry Grumbach, RAFVR.
Mm-hmm.
Harry was from a wealthy Jewish family of stockbrokers in the city and had been sent to Singapore to set up the filter room system of fighter control, working in close collaboration with RDF units.
Yeah.
You'd spent time with him at air headquarters painting maps on tables and you became friends.
Yeah.
Tragically, his efforts were to be completely wasted since the Hurricane fighters, when they did arrive, had no ground-to-air communication equipment.
Yeah, terrible.
And so could not be guided to their targets.
That's right.
After the fall of Singapore, Harry tried to re-establish a filter room in Batavia, and again you helped him. The background of the caricature depicts a pretty Dutch teenager of the sort he started to train as plotters. Harry didn't come with you to Heruku, survived and to return to his stockbroking business when your friendship lapsed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good old Harry.
Good old Harry.
Very superior man in many ways. Schoolboy.
Yeah. Pilot officer John Hart.
John Hart, yeah.
Now then. So this is why you painted him with a coat of arms with dummies.
Yeah, yeah.
Baby's dummies.
That's
on,
right,
because he was one of the youngsters, was he? Poor thing. Oh, how interesting. He was the son of a vicar in a small village near Newmarket.
That's right.
How interesting. Squadron leader Pitts.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Irish, so the family crest you've given him is bedecked with shamrock.
Yeah, that's right.
That's beautiful. And a roast joint up here.
Because he's always dreaming of food, always talking about it.
That must have driven you mad, didn't it? Didn't that drive you mad, somebody always going on about it?
No, we soon acquired a method of shutting our ears to these things.
Yes, I bet you did.
But there you are, he's always dreaming of roast chicken.
And then we have Sub-Lieutenant Cruden.
Cruden, that's right.
A Scot.
That's right.
Academically minded.
Chess player.
All right, hence the picture.
Exactly, yeah.
Great interest in archaeology, you said.
That's right, yeah. I'm just wondering whether there will be a market for a book on these caricatures.
I'm absolutely sure there would be. And I think it's something, Leslie, that we ought to explore. You published such a wonderful book in Spice Island Slaves, and this would be a really most fitting follow-up.
I think it would be well worth having a shot at it anyhow. Yeah.
Well, shall we make some inquiries?
Could do.
You and your daughter. Shall we have a go and see if we can see if there's...
Yeah.
These are just exceptional. The quality of them and the stories they tell, your snapshot descriptions of each one. So... This is Squadron Leader Briggs.
Briggs, that's right.
What do you recall of Briggs? He's a legal eagle, you say here.
That's right. He was a lawyer. Hence the coat of arms and the shield, I mean. And,
yes. Now, this is most interesting. You say here he was a civilian, he was a lawyer in civilian life. He was anathema to all RDF personnel.
He was what?
Anathema.
Yeah.
Because of a conviction held by some, who seemed to be in the know, that he had been responsible for your failure to escape the island.
Yeah.
He was held responsible in some way, was he, for that?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Next one. Squadron leader, the Reverend C.J. Tucker. Who's holding a pack of cards? This should be interesting.
Oh, yes, they used to spend the whole day playing cards. Whist.
He was one of the Anglican clergymen commissioned to look after the spiritual needs of the Irks. As far as your experience goes, he did the very minimum required of him and was much criticised for it.
Yeah.
He, together with two other padres, shared a room with you and others in HBS. Day in, day out, he spent the whole time from morning roll call to lights out playing bridge with his fellow padre cronies. As far as I am aware, no padres were ever sent on working parties and all survived.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Now.
There's an awful lot of history in these.
There most certainly is.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. Squadron leader, the Reverend T.A. Goss.
That's right. Also another padre.
And do you recall anything about him?
Not particularly, no.
Mm-hmm. You say he's a well-organised person. He was able to acquire a number of facilities. Flock mattress. Oh,
yeah.
Clever chap.
Yeah.
Yes, your picture reflects that rather well.
That's it. That's him.
Flying Officer Walter Evans. So, you seem to think that he went on to become a civil servant. A studious man, taught himself shorthand. Do you recall this chap, Benzie?
Benzie, yes.
DFC. A quiet Scot. I seem to recall had come out to Singapore as OC, one of the Hurricane squadrons. He was given the job of adjutant in the HBS camp. Squadron leader Soman. What on earth's he doing? He's running. Rugger. Looks like he plays rugger.
That's right.
Would it be Soman or Salmon?
Soman. Soman. Yeah. Bill Wren.
RAFVR.
No, Alec Gooding, isn't it?
No, it's Bill Wren.
Bill Wren, yeah.
Quite right.
Yeah.
So, you got to know Bill at RAF Salita before the invasion of Malaya started. And then he reappeared at Yarmarkt.
Yeah.
Typical man about town, suave and knowledgeable about the social niceties. There we are. Alex Gooding.
That's right.
First met him at
Yarmouth. I maintained contact with him after the war for long periods. And in fact, I think theoretically, I'm still in contact with his widow.
Right.
Yeah.
Lovely. Major
Horrigan.
Major Horrigan.
Yeah.
Now, what do we know about him?
Not very much.
You don't happen to know if he had a nickname, Hoot, do you?
No. Can't remember that.
No, that's interesting. I know of another Horrigan, an American airman, and he was US Army Air Corps.
Yeah.
Who was known as Hoot Horrigan. Came from Montana, I think.
Could be the same person, don't you think?
I think it's possible, isn't it? I mean, I think... If there's one thing I've learnt about the FIPO story is that anything's possible.
Mm.
One of the American airmen arriving late in Java only a few days before the Dutch packed it in. You didn't know him but drew his character because of his striking appearance. Indeed it was. Smoking a pipe. Pilot Officer Tiny Mason. A barrel of a man with flaming red hair and moustache. you've put here. And about... He was in HBS, he was a very efficient librarian.
Yep.
Flight Lieutenant David
Woore.
Works and Bricks official.
I must have spent an awful lot of time on these caricatures.
You certainly did. It's absolutely wonderful.
I think I was at them all day long.
Can you tell me what his Latin inscription is under his coat of arms?
No, I can't read it.
Let me try my inexplicable Latin on you. Excreta hominis non tauri. Tauri. T-A-U-R-I. If I read the...
it's a play on the word shit.
Yes.
Bullshit.
That's it.
Yeah.
So we've got here that you'd worked in with him when you were establishing the RDF unit.
That's right, yeah.
Bukit Tanjong Kupang.
He was the engineer in charge of the site.
Fine. He was one of those who sprouted a beard, a magnificent black one, before the Japanese took objection and ordered all heads and chins to be clean shaven. I think it was David that inspired me to grow my first beard, which was, of course, bright ginger. A friendly man who liked to tease, he made a caricature of me accompanied by a short critique in verse of my official duties as company adjutant in HBS. He was put in charge of the latrine facilities in this camp.
That's right.
Very important job under the extremely crowded conditions and the limited sanitary arrangements possible in what had been a school. His activities are symbolised in his shield with a... Is it Bordeaux?
Bordeaux, there's the red border. Bordeaux, yes.
Sewn with miniature footstep covers for the borehole latrines, which were dug wherever space allowed.
Yeah.
Step of bricks. Very good. Now.
Oh, that's me.
Flight Lieutenant L.J. Ordus. And this is your own.
That's David Woore's drawing.
That's David Woore's drawing of you.
That's right, yeah.
Very good. Yeah, it's also, this picture shows that you'd become a smoker and you used a long cigarette holder. Yeah, it's interesting. You said previous to captivity you had never smoked.
Yeah.
But in camp found it the only way to suppress, albeit only partially, the ever-present pangs of hunger. Flight Lieutenant Shinner.
Shinner, yes.
Business.
Or is it Skinner?
Well, it says Shinner, and you've put Shinner on here.
Yeah, must be then.
Hmm. He says here, businessman in civilian life, Shinner was a superb amateur artist who drew extremely cruel caricatures of fellow prisoners in a style closely resembling that of post-war Gerald Scarfe. Unlike me, he presented his caricatures to his victims, who presumably for that reason never seemed to resent the distortions of his portrayal of them. He survived to return to the business world. Mr. G. Buck Buchanan.
Yep.
An American electronics engineer.
That's right. That's right. He had a wooden leg. At least his lower leg below the knee was wooden.
Oh, really?
Because it's a terrible story there.
Okay, let's read this out. Buck was an American electronics engineer. In civilian life, he'd worked for Sperry Gyroscopes and had been employed, you presume, to service instruments containing them for the American forces. He'd lost a leg and been fitted with an artificial limb. As a result, always wore long slacks. Taking advantage of these facts, he constructed a miniature radio receiver, which he concealed in his tin leg. and was thus able to get news of what was happening in the world outside Java. When, during the frequent searches for such hidden equipment, when everyone had to stand on parade for hours on end while the guards ransacked the prisoner's living quarters, Buck took his receiver with him in his artificial leg. This must have required considerable courage on his part, since discovery would have meant certain execution. He survived and on return to the USA quit electronics and took a medical degree. Until he retired, he practiced medicine in Salt Lake City, but kept his interest in electronics as a radio ham. I had my first contact with him over the air in 1992.
Good Lord, yeah.
Now, isn't that extraordinary?
1992, recent to that.
That's what you say.
Oh, there, Big Thomas, yeah, Australian.
Don Thomas,
what, yeah.
What can you remember about him, Leslie?
He was mad about radio. Absolutely mad about it. Mm-hmm. Hence his...
Coat of arms,
yeah. Australia. And he went back to Australia and became the director of the astronomical telescope in Mount Stromlo in Australia. I think it's there.
Yes, it is indeed. After his return to Australia, became the chief electronics engineer on the radio telescope at Mount Stromlo Observatory near Canberra.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. He also built items such as a Bunsen burner that you needed.
Yeah, that's right.
In your experiments on the production of yeast.
Yeah, yeah.
He stood 6'4" in his socks.
I didn't realise that.
That's what you put, and was immensely strong. Indeed, he was nicknamed the horse because of his ability to pull heavy loads about the camp when called to do so. Pilot Officer Oliver. Now, he looks an older chap.
He is, very much so. Dentist.
Mm-hmm. Old Ollie was indeed old. And you'd have put his age about 60. Maybe he was younger. Whether his commission was real or acquired, you cannot tell. However, he was extremely active and a superb handyman, using carpentry skills for a number of projects to improve camp facilities. One such was the construction of the dentist chair from odds and ends and bits of furniture found around the school. He had spent most of his life in India and had been rumoured to once be a tennis player of international standing. You say you lost sight of him when you joined the Moluccas draft, but you hope he survived. He was certainly tough enough. Squadron Leader James, RAF, a senior store basher in Singapore, rather autocratic. Flight Lieutenant
Tuppome. Yep.
Tell me about Tubby Tuppome.
Well, he's very active as an adjutant, strutting around the camp as you see here, organizing things. He regular Air Force.
You say in the background of the caricature, it shows two prisoner irks humping a basket of little loaves to serve as midday meal to the officers in their section of the camp. Every prisoner in the camp received one loaf, the size of a small roll. So that was a daily intake.
Yes, the only camp we had anything like bread.
Right.
Con coffee.
Now, you were talking about coffee before.
Yeah.
Senior MO Far East. He was like Bill Tierney, a graduate of the medical school in Cork, but in your opinion was incompetent, indecisive and lazy. Although he took his proper share of stints in the sick bay, the real medical well-being of the camp rested solely in the hands of his junior officers, who held him more as a figure of fun than as a dependable head of a team. Yes, that's rather sad, isn't it?
Yep.
rather sad.